Let's Talk Letts, an original podcast from the Lettings Hub.
So, hello, and welcome to the latest episode of our podcast, Let's Talk Letts. I'm Heidi, the CEO of the Lettings Hub, the tenant referencing business that got good at tech, and Let's Talk Letts is our regular roundup of news and views on a whole range of subjects spanning the private rented sector. Today's podcast is the latest in our My Life in Lettings feature, where we explore more about people's personal career stories across the lettings arena, their journey, and the moments in their lives and careers that have been the most impactful and taught them some important life lessons. In this episode, I'm absolutely delighted to be joined by Nigel Lewis, and I'm sure many of our listeners will know Nigel as a property content writer and editor, and someone who has been a big voice in the property sector for decades. He's most well known as a journalist on The Negotiator magazine, so I feel a bit under pressure today doing this. And Nigel has also worked on many titles and portals, including Zoopla and Prime Location and A Place in the Sun. But he's also appeared on Location, 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 The One Show, Radio 5 Live. And I'm trying to think what Nigel might actually not have been on. So let's get started. Nigel, thank you so much for joining us today. Please introduce yourself to our listeners and tell us a little bit more about you and your life.
Hi, my name is Nigel Lewis. Yes, I am a freelance property journalist and editor, and I live in London, and I am a specialist in property, but I always hate that title. But that nevertheless is how my career has developed, and I've sort of fallen head first into the sector, to somewhat without any planning. But in fact, I do love it because it's a very wide area of different topics. It's not just, you know, it's a bit like cars. There's a lot more to motor vehicles than just engines and wheels. And the same way, there's a lot more to bricks and mortar than, you know, so.
Excellent. So Nigel is sporting a lovely pair of red new glasses today as well, so he looks very dashing for all our listeners. And he's just told me he's sat in France.
I am. My sister-in-law has her home down here. So every summer we come down for a couple of weeks, but I'm afraid the news doesn't stop while you're in France. So. And the wonders of the internet is that you can work anywhere, it's a letting agent sitting in your car or as a journalist sat in France.
Excellent. Good. So, as you know, My Life in Lettings is a series where we get to be a little bit nosy about people that we know in our sector. So given your career spans radio, TV and print, very much obviously looking forward to chatting with you. I'm sure we're going to discuss a range of topics, some of which might be a little bit away from lettings, actually. So my first question is, what made you want to be a journalist? And of all the roles that you've had, what's been your most favourite to date?
Gosh, that's a hard one. OK, I became a journalist because my grandfather was a TV presenter and journalist, Fife Robertson, who no one would have heard of these days because that was many years ago. But he had a primetime TV slot on Saturdays. And my aunt and uncle were both journalists, and my aunt got an OBE for efforts. So I'm distinctly the least successful of the journalists.
So far,
I think OBE or CBE is some way off, and a prime time slot on television is unlikely, but would be nice.
Okay. So were they kind of key influence that of you, as you remember from a young lad kind of growing up, seeing what they were doing?
Yeah, definitely. Although I have a relatively posh accent, in fact, all of my family came from quite humble backgrounds and used being journalists or working in the media as a way to get themselves out of their humble backgrounds and into something more adventurous and better paid. So I saw that as a way to do that too, and followed it. So it made sense.
And clearly have been hugely successful. So credit to you, definitely. So what has been your most favourite role or the time in your career that you kind of look back on and think, you know what, they were good times?
Gosh, it's really hard. I've always taken jobs which I thought were interesting. So when I worked at the Daily Mail, that was really interesting because you're on the front row of the circus, watching, you know, although I worked on property, I sat next to the gossip columnist, I sat next to the theatre review guy. The celebrity people who used to track down celebrities and try and catch them up to no good were just run. So that was really exciting. However, the Daily Mail was how should we put it politely, a stressful and sometimes quite difficult place to work. But you would expect that because it's a national newspaper. But equally placed in the Sun Channel 4 magazines. Well, that was great fun. Working with Phil and Kirsty was, you know, endlessly joyful. And Phil is actually the lovely person you see on TV. He is like that. I'm sure lots of people watching this will have met him probably when they turn up at the program turns up in areas and asks for agents to help. But they are, and will probably concur with me, which is that they are very nice people. And I really enjoyed working with them because they made the magazine good and Channel 4 were a cool place to work and place. And The Sun, also where I worked, but that was good because of the travelling.
You know,
it's just nice to go and see a different sort of property market, which is still full of Brits, or certainly was at the time in Spain, Italy, France, Bulgaria and other places. But it was, and, you know, estate agents are very different, letting agents too, very different kettle of fish abroad. So because it's much more competitive, I think it's fair to say, more competitive than the UK. And I really enjoyed that role because it was just you would go out with celebrity footballers to launch villa complexes on the Costa Blanca. Like, no one can say that's a hard job.
No.
But it was certainly fun.
You always have something to talk about dinner parties and that, I guess, in terms of, I guess, being a journalist, though, must be quite high pressure at times. Like, you've got to work long hours. You've got to be there where the news is. You've got to report it fast, quick, correct?
No, that's a very good point. And that is a position which has become more intense, or a job which has become more intense in the last 10 years since the internet has taken over. And I, you know, young journalists now marvel that my first job, which wasn't in property, involved, you know, hot metal coming off the press. Computers only came in 3 years after I joined the media. But the last 10 years particularly, all of this is same with all of our jobs. They've just increased in tempo and the hours you work and the pressure, because the old days, Daily Mail, for example, or Place in the Sun, you would have your copy would go through a whole bank of checking and what have you. These days, you are both writer, sourcer, editor, sub-editor, you know, product layout, everything. So that's completely changed, as have a lot of jobs.
So let's kind of talk back then, because you've been a journalist now for 27 years, but if we take the portals, they've only been around since the turn of this century, really. So I'm sure you've seen, as you've said, massive change over that time. Yeah. Before the portals, obviously letting agents, estate agents relied heavily on newspapers to advertise property.
Yeah.
And obviously I heard that the property pages were the second most valuable pages in a newspaper behind recruitment. I think that's right. And so the portals have been a big disruption to the traditional media. I'm quite keen to kind of to understand how you saw it develop from the inside.
Well, I was there at the beginning. So although I didn't work for Rightmove, and I now wish I had and got some shares from them, I worked for a company called Smoove, which launched pretty much the same time as Rightmove, and was for sale by owner. It didn't do lettings or anything, but it did sales. And but that crashed and burned because obviously the internet wasn't ready for that. But certainly it was an auger of things to come. And although I didn't work at Rightmove, I did work at Zoopla and also Property Finder, Prime Location, and in total about 5 years, because it was going to be the future of writing about property. Mm-hmm. And yes, you are right. I'm afraid my efforts probably would be very much criticised by some print journalists, particularly in the regional media, because it gutted particularly a lot of local newspapers. Lost. I talked to one executive only quite recently. He recently left the industry only a couple of years ago, and he was saying, you know, they lost 50% of their revenue to the portals because. Mm. 50% of their revenue came from property advertising. So, and that's why the Daily Mail and the Mirror Group invested so heavily in the property portals that agents use day in, day out. Because they thought if they've lost this advertising, then we'll pick up the letting agents and sales agents, and, you know, by owning the portals. But it was a bit of hit and miss. You know, for a while, the local newspapers and the nationals were trying to buy them up and try and access that new market by owning them. because they lost that market. The agents all left them to go and list on the portals.
Okay. So let's kind of move on then to kind of more current times. We now have a general election looming.
Yeah.
A lot of buzz around that in terms of what it holds for the property sector. Obviously, rent reform is canned, but I suppose really shelved because I think it's going to come back in whatever form. But I'm keen to know, in your experience, what implications could a change in government have in the rental market? What do you think is likely to happen next?
I think what tends to happen is that governments like to win votes. I'm being contentious here, like to win votes by talking about the housing industry, and particularly at the moment, trying to capture the renter votes with promises about the private rental sector. What tends to then happen is it proves and is always proves to be very complicated and difficult to implement. And the regulation of property agents and the Renters Reform Act, abolishing Section 21, bringing all the other stuff was, in my opinion, humble opinion, far too ambitious. It was never going to happen in the time frame. It was never going to become law. I think Labour, although only yesterday the NRLA was saying they believed Labour would pick it up and run with it again, I think it's going to be just as problematical for them as it was the Conservatives. So I think some elements of it might go forward. So abolishing Section 21 may happen first, along with perhaps the portal and maybe the new housing ombudsman for tenants and landlords, for landlords. But the rest of it, I don't know. I can't see it happening in the short term. So I think it could easily end up not ever happening because I think a lot of it could end up not happening because Labour will find it. It's easy to say things and are quite much more difficult to do things in this industry.
Do you get to choose what stories you report on? Pick the ones that are a big interest to you, or
are you... not to me. No. I suppose the skill that all of the editors and different newspapers and online trade news outlets do is that all the editors, they are trying to work out what the readers will find or is most relevant to them and is likely to get them to click on the story. And again, back to our original point, the internet has made that much quicker and faster and much more bang, bang, bang. The old days, you would lay out a page, print it the next morning, someone would buy a newspaper and maybe read it at lunchtime. Now you're publishing a story online and getting, you know, whatever, 1,000 views instantly.
Yeah.
Within half an hour or an hour. So you get a much, it's actually quite useful for us because you get a much faster idea of what is, what topic is of interest to the readers directly. It can get a bit brutal. In the old days, you could do more creative things. Now you have to shy away from being more discussion-led and creative. You have to be much more news. What's happening and what does it mean to the... You know, I'm sure it's the same for all businesses online. It's happening faster.
Yeah. Obviously, as you mentioned, I'm sure you cover a total range of stories in and outside of the property sector. Some obviously very much going to be data-led, policy changes, etc. But there's obviously also some more people-based stories.
Yeah.
I'm curious in terms of what has been some of the hardest stories that you've had to cover and why has that been?
I think the hardest stories, I know probably many people might laugh, but the hardest story I probably ever tackled in recent years, let's say, is when letting agents or sales agents come to you and want your help. Because what's a journalist supposed to do? Is they're supposed to help people almost mediate between two warring parties. And that might be a landlord who feels aggrieved, or it might be a tenant who feels aggrieved, or it might be a letting agent or a sales agent who feels aggrieved about something. And they go to and they say, I've been ripped off, I'm in trouble, and or I think a decision by, you know, one of the redress schemes, just let's say, for example, is I don't agree with, will you help me promote it? And it's treading a careful line along the precipice of that subject matter is the hardest thing ever, because you don't want to annoy everyone but you want to have a truthful representation of what is going on. That is always the hardest thing to do. You know, if we've come out and say that 40% more letting agents, you know, have reported higher listings, you know, there's nothing particularly controversial about that. You just need to get it out as fast as possible. So the hardest, actually one of the hardest periods was when COVID came in and Rightmove got into some right old trouble over, as did Zoopla, to be balanced, OTM less so, but certainly Rightmove got into right old trouble because they didn't read the room and didn't realise a lot of agents were struggling and angry about, you know, fees and being put up during COVID and stuff. But that was a situation which was resolved ultimately. But negotiating that argument, which between the no to Rightmove agents and the ones who disagreed with them, and Rightmove and Zoopla, made it quite hard some mornings to write copy which was truthful and balanced and got the point over accurately.
What about a story? Have you ever published one you've regretted, or, you know, made mistakes?
Sure. The best one was in the Daily Mail, and I used to have a little column which was a small funny column about commercial property for sale. We used to do it, you know, once a month. And your listeners may remember that in the comedy, I can't remember it now, with John Cleese, set in the Southwest Resort with the hotel.
Faulty Towers.
Yes,
I remember that. Faulty Towers. Manuel, exactly.
And they were well remembered. And there were two hotels involved. There was the hotel that had inspired the Monty Python team and John Cleese to write Faulty Towers. Then there was the hotel where it was filmed. And the two were very close to each other in almost identical towns next door to each other. And I said one of them burnt down, and I got the wrong one, and said which was still trading and very, very, and very happily. And just to show the reach of the mail, I suppose, the next day we got a rather stiff letter from the lawyers, from the hotel owner's lawyers. And I was absolutely, excuse my French, breaking it. I think this is the end of my career. Luckily, because he could have sued us for a lot. Luckily, he said he had some Japanese clients who read the paper the next day. It must have been printed in those days in Asia. And they had said, are you okay? We've noticed your hotel's burnt down. Luckily, thank goodness, he took it in the right way for me anyway. And he was amused by the whole thing and said, don't worry, I apologize. I grovelled in front of him and it all went away. But that was an example of how, you know, not checking your facts can get you into trouble. So it taught me a good lesson.
And I guess now, if that happened and it's mainly online, you can actually remedy that fairly fast, can't you? If you haven't, I suppose if you've made a mistake or if the room hasn't been read right.
Correct. Yes. You can change. Yes. That's exactly. Absolutely. And that doesn't. It's not an excuse, but it does make my life easier because once it's printed, it's printed, and there's nothing you can do about it.
When you go to write a story, do you type it? Do you speak it? How have you changed over time in terms of how you approach it?
When I was a younger journalist and used things like shorthand and tape recorders, I used to do that, and then you would formulate it in your mind, write a draft copy out, and then particularly when it was being laid out, you would have to have the final copy on the physical laid out page, which had been cut and pasted bits of paper or whatever. You remember, you take it then to a company who would make it into a negative or positive, what you call it. Now these days, I'm afraid the internet's made everything much sloppier. You tend to write two or three drafts out on a Word document, and then once you're happy with it, upload it, and then before you press publish, check it one final time. So it's easier, but less exciting.
And have you definitely found you've got quicker over time in terms of being able to kind of, because you've got to become an expert at some of this stuff quite quickly to be able to position it right, haven't you?
Yeah, and background knowledge helps and experience counts. If you've worked on national newspapers or you've worked in a newsroom of any description, whether it be in television or whatever. But you, when someone says your third page has been scrapped because they've decided they don't like it and you need to write a new one and we're going to press in 3.5 hours, that teaches you to do things fast, very quickly. Yeah.
Okay, great. So if we talk back to the property sector, obviously relationships, you know, massively important. Yeah. Most businesses thrive on people getting along with other people and adding value. And I guess you've actually spent your career building relationships. What do you think, from kind of what you've witnessed over the years, are people and organisations getting right and getting wrong?
From a business perspective or from networking media perspective?
Yeah, probably a bit of that, really, you know, in terms of where are all of us, you know, where could we all improve?
I don't want to turn it into a sort of media management advice, but certainly from a journalist point of view, and that's where I'm coming from, the challenge sometimes is that there are some organisations in all industries, particularly property, which has so many of them, and so many small, medium-sized ones, as well as very, you know, one branch, but also the big corporate. But and being sized doesn't necessarily mean they're better at this, but they tend to sometimes get it wrong when they make a mistake. And if someone has come to me or any other journalist working in this sector and said, I'm unhappy about I'm suspicious about what this company is up to, whether it be the way they employ people from you might be an ex-member of staff, or it's a customer, so landlord, buyer, seller, tenant, whatever, then if that organization comes back and says, you know what, I think we've made a terrible mess of this, and let me talk it through with you, and if you want, I'm more than happy to sit down with the person who's aggrieved, we can have a quick chat on video or something, or on the, then you go, that's great, because that's what your job is, to try and mediate. And if they say, you dare say any of this, and we'll, you know, come down like a ton of bricks, and then it tends to make you think that you're right. If their response is a sort of natural, empathetic and human one, then you think, well, they are a nice organization and perhaps this person isn't right, and just a quick chat between the three of them, you still got a story, but you are reassured. And that's what I would say, you can't lie about this, either you have that culture in your company or you don't. But there are certainly some companies and even big corporates in the agency sector who don't take that enlightened view and are very, very aggressive when it comes to any criticism of them in the media. So, but that's the way they choose to do it. I'm not saying they shouldn't. I'm just saying that is my view on what they do.
You've got personally now a really large following on Twitter or X, haven't you, that you've built up over time?
Yeah, I guess. I know. I always feel slightly guilty that some housing ministers have fewer followers than me, but there are lots of people who are much more active on social media.
There's lots
media.
Of housing ministers.
Social media is a funny thing. It's useful for dinner parties and meetings with people and interviews, but you have to really, really do it almost full time as a separate job to make it really worth your while. And there are some people in this industry who do it pretty much full time as a job, and Russell Quirk would be a good example. He is on every platform daily, and that's great. And I do admire him for that, because he's got a day job as well, running a PR company and what have you. But it's just very hard to do social media and be a journalist and do it all the time.
Yeah,
the two suck time out of you. And social media, do you get thousands more views on your articles because of Twitter? Maybe, but not as much as you'd hope.
Yeah, absolutely. And do you find it easy to kind of be authentic when you write on social platforms, or do you have to, you know, deliberately work on your style or how you position things?
I try and keep it very bland, because on the occasions when I have put forthright opinions out, or I have sort of had spats with housing ministers, which did happen once, but it sucks so much time out of my life trying to do all the answers and read, make sure, you know, I wasn't libeling anyone and all this sort of stuff, that that it sort of put me off. So I tend to go, I tend on Twitter to go, if I do post, is and Facebook and other platforms as well, is more to say, here's my story, this is what I've done today. If you want to read it, that's great. I don't tend to put opinions out because I think journalists should be independent and shouldn't really have strong opinions, because then people don't trust what you say.
Now, a little while ago now, you interviewed me, and one of the things I noticed at that interview, and I know we've spoken about it today a little bit, but you are a really efficient person with your time. You're upbeat, you're lively, you're passionate, but you get to the point fast and you get the information out of someone and you move on. Is that a natural trait, or is that very much something that you kind of have to work on because time is money, you know, news is like, it's got to be live, like.
No, that's a good question. No, the answer is I'm not like that in real life at all. And my wife pokes fun at me immensely because I'm this sort of, you know, a machine that can produce copy and do interviews and upload stories and find pictures and get quotes and all this sort of stuff, and hopefully get stories out as fast as we should be getting them out. Whereas, you know, outside of the work environment, I think I just sort of drop my brain outside of the door of work. And my wife thinks it's hugely amusing because I'm notoriously the opposite in life.
So, yeah.
Not. I am still energetic and a positive person, but there's sort of I don't like to I like to try and separate work and life a bit and relax outside of
workout. So sometimes when I finish work for the day, my husband says to me, "Oh, you just don't really want to talk to me, do you?" And I'm like, "I just feel I've talked all day." Sometimes I'm actually quite happy to just not talk anymore. Yeah. Are you kind of similar sometimes?
Yes, for me that's reading. So, you know, I used to read a lot of books, and I used to read them quickly. Again, my wife is a voracious book reader, and she can read them in a couple of days. But because my job involves just reading probably 10,000 words every day, reports, press releases, your own copy, other people's copy, other people's newspaper articles that you might feel is a potential story, all that stuff means the last thing I want to do when I put my laptop lid down at whatever time is to then pick up a book and start reading again. Shouldn't be that way, but it is. I don't even watch television. I tend to do things.
Let's talk about that, because I'd love to hear more about Nigel. So tell us about some of the adventures you've been on, how you do like spending your time beyond work in the letting sector.
I have a motorbike, 800cc, if any motorcyclists out there, Benelli, which I drive around France and England at the legal speed limit, obviously. And I also go off-road motorbiking in Wales and Portugal with some friends. I also play the violin, occasionally the saxophone. If you wish to see me, if you live near the Sloop in Haywards Heath, then you'll see me play open mic most first Sundays of every month. And I play in a band with some friends. And also I am a cyclist, road cyclist, mountain biker. And I also occasionally cook.
Oh, wow. That is a man of many talents. That's well, a very interesting life.
Yeah. Because you're mediocre at all of them rather than. So I've got friends who are very good road cyclists, but that's all they do in their spare time. But We all have hobbies, and it's hobbies are, again, suck a lot of time out of your life. And so keeping your partner happy and your work ticking over, but also filling your spare time is sometimes feel like there is no such thing as spare time. But that's how I am. So that's fine.
It sounds like you're never bored, and it sounds like you're a really interesting go-getting person.
So I try to be.
What's next for you? Like, do you have any massive ambitions for the future or things you really want to achieve?
So I suppose I have achieved most of the goals that I thought I would achieve in my career. And 10 years ago, I decided to go freelance, and I decided to, you know, become a trade journalist. And I used to be very much consumer, writing about celebrities and stuff. But that eventually gets a bit dull. And what I do like, and I always have enjoyed, is writing about the industry. So because it's such a, you know, there's how many, you know this, I think there's what, 8, 9, 10,000 letting agent
branch? Oh yeah,
maybe more than that, 14 maybe. So there's probably, yeah. Anyway, they all get up to a variety of great and terrible and interesting and weird things, both in their professional and not professional lives. So I enjoy writing about it. In terms of what I do next, I don't really know. I would like to get fitter and be a better sports person. And I would probably, if someone said, do you want to have a crack at TV, I'd probably give it a go. Whether I have the skill set to do that, who knows? But my grandfather, who was a journalist like me all his life, but he happened to be walking into the BBC to go and see a friend for lunch, and someone said, "Oi, you over there." And within the next minute, in his 60s, when most people are retired, he was on the what was then the One Show as a along with Alan Wicker as a presenter, and soon after that. So you never know.
You never know. There's time.
You never know. Yeah, there's exactly. Time. I'm only 56, so there's a lot of time to go before you can say the game's up yet. So.
Absolutely. Now, you alluded to it a minute ago in the fact that the industry is particularly fun and there's always stories. So before you go, our regular listeners of Let's Talk Let's will know that we always ask our guests for a funny story or anecdote from a time in their career or a time in the property sector that they can share with us.
Right. Yes. You warned me about this, so I've been trying to think. So funny. I'm not sure this is funny or not, but I find it quite amusing. But which is when I worked at Zoopla, and I joined them because they bought Prevarication, and what have you. And so I got sucked into Zoopla, and I was very happy that they had decided not to make me sack me from publication and that they had decided instead to keep me and make me head of content at Zoopla. And every day almost, including at some of the meetings with Alex Chesterman, he always kept saying, Nigel, we must have lunch and have a chat. But occasionally I'd see him outside smoking and I go, all right, lunch tomorrow. He go, yeah, let's do lunch. Anyway, on the day he phoned me up and said, do you want to do lunch, I resigned.
Oh.
we never ever had that lunch because my wife and I took a two-year career break and ran chalets in the Alps for 2 years.
Oh, lovely.
I have a horrible feeling you probably never thanked me for that, but anyway, that the lunch I never had with Alex Chesterman.
Oh, that's a good story. So to ensure all of our listeners never miss an episode of Let's Talk Let's, please follow us on Spotify or wherever you listen to your podcasts. Leave us a review if you like it. Thank you so much for listening, and a massive thank you to you, Nigel. You've been excellent. Thank you
for having me.
Let's Talk Let's, an original podcast from the Lettings Hub.